for the first time, I'm sitting down. I'm seated during our little interview here. I usually stand, but I'm taking a.
It looks like you have wings. What are you wearing? But what is that behind you? It looks like there's like wings behind you.
Is it just the chair?
Yeah. Oh, that's the chair.
Yeah, there you go. It's one of our dining room chairs. You kind of snuck it in.
Nice.
So, Pat, anyway. Is that because are you in a wheelchair?
Dude, well, I mean, anybody, I guess, who listened to the last one, it's kind of related to why we get Sean here. You know, the last one we chatted about me literally having a total hip replacement, and it was 1 week ago today. As we record this, it's Wednesday the 22nd. I had it on Wednesday the 15th. So I was just heading into the surgery center at this time 7 days ago. But, you know, got to pay the bills. So here we are chatting with the doc.
You look good. You don't look too pale. Are you eating red meat? Get some red blood cells cooking back in there.
Oh, doc, I tell you, man. Obviously, I've never done this before. You've done a bunch of these, you know, and we wanted to have you on based upon a question that we got a couple of shows ago. That the doctor, you know, said that whatever lifting was the devil and you shouldn't move. And you know, we consulted you about it was about arthritis, and you waited, and we're like, man, we should get you in the show. I think I'm doing pretty well.
You look good.
But I don't think I gave this surgery the respect that it deserved because everyone's like, oh, you're so lucky it's not a knee. Hips are so much better than knees. And I got in my head like, you're right, hips are so much better than knees. This is gonna be a joke, quite frankly. Like, yeah, they're gonna saw the head of my femur off and put me back together, but I'm gonna be zipping around in no time.
This is not to be taken lightly, my friend. To do that, it's not like a pedicure, dude.
No. So, I mean, I'm doing well. And out of 7 days, I think I've been good five. I've only had two pretty darn bad days. One of them was my fault because one of the pain meds, oxycodone or whatever it is they gave me, you know, with good need, they're like, hey, this constipate you. There's a stool softener. And in my head, I was like, I don't want to deal with a stool softener. So I'm just not going to take the pain meds. And then I won't get all backed up.
I told you.
And life's great.
I told you. You said, what advice do you have?
And I immediately disregarded it. So Wednesday night, I got home. I still have some sedation going through my body. And, you know, I think you can take like 10 of those a day. I just took one oxycodone when I went to bed that night just to make sure I slept through the night. And I got a decent night's sleep, probably still had some sedation in me. And woke up the next morning, a little, you know, tender, if you will. And then I just was like, I'm good. I'm going al natural on this one. And over the course of the day, I became progressively just more lightheaded, out of touch with reality, and just in the fifth ring of hell until sometime that evening, like profusely sweating is like, I'm tapping. This is so anyway, I've been, and as it turns out, pain meds, they work really well.
Go figure.
Who would have known?
Some of these guys, Dr. Rocket, too tough for their own good. I'm telling you.
People are frightened. And I get it. Believe me, sure. I get it. There is definitely an issue with narcotics in America. But like, people are like, oh no, I'm not taking narcotics. And I was like, I don't want to say you have to, but you know, for a knee replacement, people come back and I'm like, how are you doing with your bend of your knee? Like, are you bending? And they go, I'm off my narcotics. And I go, show me the bend of your knee. And they go, oh, it hurts too much. And I'm like, that's why we're giving, like, you have to get your range of motion back.
Mm-hmm.
And it's temporary. And believe me, I've been doing it for, you know, whatever, 25 years. I've never had anybody get hooked on it.
Like, I wasn't concerned about that at all. I just, for some reason, was like,
people are nervous. They hear like, if I take it,
yeah.
I'm gonna get addicted. Like,
I was like, I just don't want to get backed up. I don't take a stool softener. But anyway, I went down that road. But hey, let's give some people, you know, who are you? What are you all about? Why are you wearing a set of blue pajamas in case anybody's just listening to this in audio format and they can't see you? You know, what's the deal?
Well, it saves on dry cleaning. So, my name's Sean Rocket, orthopedic surgeon out of Boston. I know you guys through my CrossFit connections, which have been back since 2007. Grew up at Ben Bergeron at CrossFit New England. And then my wife started CrossFit Launchpad out of our garage, out of our house.
Great name, by the way.
CrossFit launch. But yeah, we couldn't do Rocket. Someone else took Rocket. So, and you can't have your own first name, so or your last name. So yeah, so Launchpad. That was what we decided on. And yeah, I'm the orthopedic surgeon for the CrossFit Games since 2012, working with Mike Ray on the medical team. And yeah.
Mike Ray, there's an OG behind the scenes that not too many people are aware of.
Behind, exactly.
In the shadows, lurking in the shadows, getting things done. That's right.
Yep. Been there for years.
Great guy.
Absolutely.
How long did you just say you've been in orthopedics or medicine?
Well, I graduated residency in 1999. So med school, 93, residency, 99. And doing sports medicine, I do shoulders and knees and hip replacements and knee replacements since then.
Man, all right. Well, I can't wait just to have a little chat with you, not only to, you know, use you as my own amazing, you know, sounding board for where I am now, but just, I mean, let me do what I do so well, which is make a blanket statement and overly simplify things. You know, for the longest time, when CrossFit was coming up and people were still learning how to lift and maybe the form was still in the very early phases and people were posting videos that looked far from ideal, everyone's comments were, you're going to keep your surgeons in business. You're going to keep your PTs in business. You know, that's a one-way ticket to a fill in the blank. Yeah. So you get people coming to you with knees, hips and shoulders. And we talk about some high use joints right there. What are most of the mechanisms of injury that land people having a consultation with you? Yeah, is it strength and conditioning?
Yeah, it's overuse, doing too much. And I've been on many podcasts saying this, like the most common thing I see are people just overdoing it and not listening to their body. So tendonitis, which is little microscopic tears in the tendon, which can heal on its own. And if you listen to it, you'll be fine in 2 or 3 weeks. But if you say, I'm going to keep going for 6 months, and you show up on my doorstep with 6 months of shoulder pain just from overdoing it and not listening to yourself or listening to your coach, then it could take 6 months to go away.
Is overdoing it, could that be anything on the face of the earth? Are you specifically talking about sports, fitness, things like that?
Yeah, so I see a lot of sports medicine. You know, if you're talking CrossFit in general, it's typically biceps tendonitis. So that you know, that shoulder salute that everybody has in the gym where they're like, how you doing? Oh, my shoulder's a little. That is biceps tendonitis. And it happens early on, usually, like someone who has not been lifting weights over their head or doing anything like that. The biceps starts to get inflamed, and the inflammation from the tendon getting little micro tears in it because the muscles aren't built up enough yet. So if the muscles aren't built up enough yet, then the tendon gets little tears in it, and microscopic tears, nothing gross or ripped or anything like that. And so that's the biggest issue I see, is that people just overdoing it early on, and then sometimes later when they aren't taking rest days, they're pushing hard through the rest days, and you know, we see this sometimes, you know, with CrossFit, that they agree.
Even the dogs, know.
Sorry. Yeah, got my little pound in the background there. But so, Sean, I think what Pat might be stabbing at here is not so much if we're talking specifically about an athletic population. I mean, sure, if you're fit and you're hard charging, there's going to be some bumps along the road. I disagree with this take that, you know, if you're going to be active, you're going to be injured at some point. I think that's not necessarily true. I think if you're going to live on planet Earth, you are probably going to experience some physical hardship in one way or another at some point. So what I think is kind of maybe more the thrust here is compared to what, right? Like compared to a non-athletic population, the perception seems to be, oh, well, if you engage in like a high intensity activity, at some point, it's going to spell disaster for you on a structural level. Now, I don't think that's my observation. When I take a look around and I see people that don't take care of themselves, they're not active, I'm like, look, I tell you which boat I would rather be in. And I think that's what gets lost sometimes is not just talking about, not just talking about the athletic populations, but those that don't take care of themselves.
What's that comparison? If you follow your coach and your coach is abiding by the L1 of form and intensity and not overdoing it, not going for the one rep PRs. And I think that's what I see a lot of probably is, you know, people going for the one rep PRs and hurting themselves, you know, going too heavy. So I think, again, I've been the doctor that's been saying, like, you don't have to go for PRs. Like, you can get there, but don't go right off the bat and say, I'm going to keep my numbers are going to keep going on a 45 degree percentage. Right? It's going to stop at some time.
It's going to stop at some time.
Right? And who knows when, but that's the tough part too. When you start off at CrossFit, your numbers are doing this. You're like, let's go. Mm-hmm. And then there is a plateau, a physiologic plateau based on your body habitus or your muscle strength or whatever. And that's a tricky part too. When your numbers start to plateau. But yeah, certainly for somebody who's not, you know, fit and getting fit, we know that the benefits of exercise and high intensity exercise outweigh certainly the couch and it's, you know, mentally, physically, metabolically, cardiac wise, bone health wise, all these tendon wise, building up strength for your tendons can happen. Like your tendons don't have to grow old as you grow old. Your tendons and your muscles can get bigger.
So do you have a specific population that you serve that is athletics related in, you know, in sports medicine, so to speak, or do you see the entire gamut of the population? Because outside of people who came to see you because, you know, like you said, biceps tendonitis, overuse from overhead position was cranky, and I decided to be a tough guy, so I kept going. Like outside the strength and conditioning world, what do you see bangs people up that they come in for the shoulder, the hip, and the knee?
I see a lot of workers who lifted a garbage can that was too heavy for them. They didn't test it out, you know, test out the weight of it, and they ripped, you know, they ripped their tendon that way. Mm. I see people with arthritis, you know, because I do knee replacements and you know, hip replacements. So people with arthritis, you know, and they are just having pain from, you know, either overdoing it or just the progression of the disease. But I certainly tell people that if you have arthritis, you have to keep moving. Like you cannot succumb to arthritis. The joint has to move. It has to improve. And there are studies showing that exercise helps the pain from arthritis. Mm. Certainly there are times, you know, where people just can't, like they just can't do it. Mm-hmm. Knee replacement is a way for them to stay healthy and active for their heart and their lungs because their joint just broke down, you know, and it's, you know, people are upset about if their joint breaks down, but sometimes it's genetic. Sometimes it's after an injury or trauma. And, you know, it's certainly better to get the knee replacement so you can then keep active and keep, you know, for your health, for your heart and your lungs and everything like that. So, but we certainly try conservative.
Well, Pat, I'm curious.
Go ahead.
So all of these benefits that you talk about, I think the three of us, you know, we're on the same side of this argument that it's better to remain active. Yes, even if there are some scrapes in the hood, so to speak, it's in your best interest holistically to maintain an active life, to continue pursuing these things. You know, might have to modify some things about that habit, depending on the situation you're in. But on the net balance, way better to continue pursuing that active lifestyle. Why do you think that so many people in the kind of healthcare space, if we're looking at the mainstream application of it, why do you think they take such a conservative approach? Because I feel like there's still this pervasive myth around, you know, well, you got to be so careful. The human body is just this delicate organism that's just waiting to fall apart. So where do you think that comes from?
I don't know. I don't know. Maybe that some doctors, you know, are not sports medicine minded. Maybe some primary care is maybe not sports medicine minded. Certainly, you know, whenever, you know, I've written some articles for the CrossFit Journal about arthritis And when somebody says, you know, lifting weights off the ground versus, you know, lifting a child off the ground, like if you invoke a weight, it all of a sudden, you know, people get crazy. But if you're saying you're lifting your kid up off the ground, like it's, I think it's just people fear, or some doctors fear, that people are going to get hurt. And, you know, we know that the data on CrossFit and exercises depends on your exercise. If you're playing basketball or soccer, you might get an ACL tear, you know, very common injury in basketball, soccer, and football. But we know that CrossFit's up there with weightlifting and gymnastics. It's not, it's the injury rate is less than running. Running has a higher injury rate than CrossFit. It's, and I think early on, you know, some of the gyms, maybe, you know, we talk about chasing the PRs. People were probably hitting some weights heavy and banging some weights and maybe, you know, going too far. And I think it's certainly, hopefully with education.
That was me.
Hopefully with education, it's kind of come back to this where I've always stood, like, because I love it. I love doing it. And I'm not going to hurt myself. That's the last thing I want to do.
Mm-hmm.
You just be reasonable about it and enjoy what you're doing and be reasonable with your weights that you can do this forever.
Yeah. Guidance and the umbrella and the people that you come into it would probably make a big difference. You know, back then I didn't have a good peer group. We weren't well educated. We had a lot of passion and enthusiasm and a lot of energy. And the goal every day was just to send it harder than we did the day before. Right. And luckily it didn't catch up with us too badly. I got a question for you, Doc. I'm sure there's a fair number of people listening to this just through whatever it happened to be. Overuse in the gym, like you said, lifted up a trash can that was too heavy. But human life has, you know, it knocks you around a bit. And so they've got something going on in their shoulder or in their knee or in their hip. So where do you have some sort of good guidance for somebody's decision matrix in their own head as to, well, you know what? Yeah, I got that shoulder, the knee thing. It's come and go. It's hit or miss. You know, how do I make the assessment as to whether or not I just, quote unquote, lay off it for a bit? Or am I ignoring something that I shouldn't ignore and I should make an appointment to go see somebody like yourself?
Yeah. So usually I'll say if something, you know, rip, pops, tears, looks deformed, is huge swelling, bruising, some injury.
The person on the lifting platform next to you heard it. And that's a good indicator.
If somebody else hears it. So acute injury, that's usually come see us. We'll make sure everything's okay. No injury, like just some soreness. You come to me at a week or a day or 2 days, I'm going to tell you, back off. Let's see how it goes. Do some therapy. So no injury, just overuse, shoulders hurting or muscles are hurting or elbows hurting or, you know, knees hurting a little bit. Give it time, you know, and rest. Like even my wife, like, she's been hitting it pretty hard recently and she's been limping and I, you know, she's like, oh, my knee's killing me. And I'm like, haven't you been doing a lot recently? And she's like, yeah, I go, why don't you take 2 or 3 days and just do some stretching. And like, I saw her on the fourth day. I'm like, what's going on? She goes, oh, I feel better.
Yeah.
So,
so you might know before too long. It's not like you're going to have to wait 6 weeks. If you give something a light week, an easy week.
Three, 4 weeks. And that's tough too for people, 3 or 4 weeks. People love their class, their workout and their, you know, all their friends there. But, you know, and that's one that I say, that's the beauty of CrossFit. If your knee is killing you, guess what? You get to do other stuff. Mm-hmm. If your ankle is hurting you and you're a runner, I don't know. You're going to do push-ups. You know, like,
sure, you'll find something for you.
Yeah. No. So if, you know, that's the beauty. That's where the scaling comes in, the modifying. Good coaches will help you. They'll keep you in the class. They'll keep you doing stuff without stressing.
Okay. So let's say that a person goes through that decision-making matrix in their head. And after listening to that, they're like, it's funny that the doc says that. I can't pinpoint an acute thing that did occur. You know, it did have a nice audible sound to it that was interesting, you know, and they're going to go and they're going to see their physician, which sadly is not you. It's going to be somebody else. They're going to have to settle for somebody else. Now, I'm sure like doctors, like auto mechanics, like everything else, you've got a range of ones that are exceptional and ones that are less than exceptional. What you know, if you were giving advice to somebody on the other side of the world, walking to their doctor to assess them, like, I guess some doctors are quick to, hey, we should cut you open. Other doctors are like, that's the last resort, and everything in between. You know, what's your assessing of the situation or guides to somebody walking into their to their physician that is having some sort of a pain and they're not quite sure as to whether or not they're going to have to get sliced open?
Yeah, number one, it has to be bad enough. Like if it's just a little mild ache or soreness, you know, that's the first thing is like, give this time. Do not jump to surgery. There are certain times where you need to pull the trigger. You have to pull the trigger. Like if someone's quad tendon is ripped, they can't walk. That's going to get better. You have to fix that. A meniscus is a very sort of gray area thing. Like how bad's the pain? Is the meniscus, which is the cartilage in the knee, is it causing my knee to lock or get stuck? That's pretty rare. And that's an absolute. Like if you can't straighten out your leg, if it's your leg is, and it literally is like a, there's a marble in a door jam and you're trying to shut it and it just like that's an absolute surgery. But if it's just pain and it's mild and it's, you know, inhibiting your squat, that's a gray area. That's one where you just hold off on your squats. Don't hurt yourself. Let's see if it, sometimes these meniscal tears are very small. They can sometimes heal on their own. They can sometimes just be quiet. They don't hurt. Like I describe it like a hangnail. If you have a hangnail and you just keep pulling on the hangnail, guess what? It's going to hurt. But if you have a hangnail and you just leave it alone and you stop pulling on it, you'll still have a tear, but it might not hurt. So, I would say severity is number one. And then certainly, you know, not rushing into surgery. That's, you know, anytime you go into surgery and you're questioning, do I need surgery? And the surgeon is like, oh, you absolutely have to have surgery. Like, be careful with that. You know, it's surgery of all the, like I see 100, you know, say I see 100 people, surgery is like 10% of them. It's not, you know, we're not operating.
Interesting. Right.
It's, you got to know when to pull the trigger and hopefully you're getting good advice from somebody who's busy enough that they're not going to want to operate on anybody that walks through the door.
And what's the middle ground, right? Because, where did I want to go with this? You know, a lot of things, the body's amazing. A lot of things, if you just lay off it and you be kind to it and give it some time, you might be impressed with what the body can do on its own. And then there are some things that are without question, sorry, my friend, let's get you on the books. We need to get this handled. And then it sounds like there's also a bit of that gray area, like you said, as to individuals' threshold for pain tolerance. Is this just slightly annoying in your life? Or is it keeping you from, is it impacting the quality of your life and some daily activities?
Sleep is a, you know, is your shoulder, like a partial rotator cuff tear of the shoulder, very common. A lot of people over the age of certain number, as you get more experienced in life, get approaching that experience. But a partial, you know, a rotator cuff is attached here. It helps lift the shoulder. If you have a partial, and that's very common because MRIs are pretty common now that shows the detail. If you have a little small partial tear, that comes down to, can you function? Can you exercise? Can you work? Can you do your job? And can you sleep? If those are all yes, let's wait and see, you know?
And then what are some of those in-between areas, right? It's not just rest and it's not surgical intervention, it's potentially like an injection. Like when is an injection the right call? And what does that actually solve or not solve? Or does it just mask something?
Yeah. You know, so there's physical therapy first and modifying what you're doing. That's number one. Strengthening up the, if you for some reason have a deficit of one muscle or the other, sometimes just strengthening up the other muscles will help take the pressure off. You got to be careful with physical therapy. Sometimes it can sort of not accelerate, but if somebody's pushing you to strengthen and they're pushing the muscles that are hurt to strengthen, sometimes physical therapy I've seen not worsen the condition, but cause more pain. So you got to, it's a good to give your therapist feedback about that.
Okay.
And then cortisone and anti-inflammatories, you got to be careful with those because they can mask certain situations and decrease pain, but you still have the tear or you still have the, so I'll break out cortisone, like say it's a bursitis, which is not a structural rip, but just inflammation in the shoulder, say I'll break out a cortisone for that because that can sometimes just take away your pain and let you sleep. You know, people who are sleeping do not tolerate conservative measures well. So sometimes a cortisone for straightforward bursitis. Cortisone for a rotator cuff tear, like an acute tear that is ripped, not a great idea, because we know that that can just not help and that the tear needs to be reattached. So a young person with an acute rotator cuff tear, that's a surgery. And, you know, most people's book. But yeah, so, and then anti-inflammatories and tendonitis. Say you have that patella tendonitis in the knee or your or tennis elbow, and you take a anti-inflammatory and it makes it feel better. You still have those micro tears.
Right.
And those tears are still there. They still need to heal, but the anti-inflammatory masks it and covers it and lets you do more, which then...
Yeah, well, along those same lines, I think that's always a question. You know, when somebody is injured and they've gone through their diligence, like they've legitimately had something happen and they go, maybe they seek the advice of somebody like yourself, or, you know, they have somebody who's trusted, who's guided them, whether that's surgical intervention or not, there's a recovery period. And I think what comes up often with CrossFit-minded people, especially, because like I said, I do think there's a lot of people that are too tough for their own good, is that they start to feel better and therefore in their mind, they are healed. How much truth is there to that? What is a realistic healing time frame? You know, is it true that you still have to be cautious even once you start feeling a little bit better because you may not be completely healed? You know, any general guidance around post-injury recovery and the best path back to maybe not just full functionality, but exceeding your pre-injured level at some distant future?
Yeah, you know, so say it comes to surgery and you're doing a surgery, you know, I never want anybody to be the fastest recovery known to mankind. Like, it's like you
Pat, take notes.
I'm trying, my friend.
Like, we put a lot of work into what we're doing. We're not just, you know, we're actually putting work in, and when they can undo that work, that's not good. So say it's a knee scope and it's quick little trim of a knee scope and a trim of a meniscus. You got to get the swelling down. The people that actually do the worst are the ones who do more in that first week. They're not letting the body quiet. They're not doing range of motion and just gentle stretching. They're not letting the swelling go down. They're, oh, I feel great. My knee pain went away. And then they decide they're going to go run or do whatever. Then the knee blows up. And now you're fighting a post-swelling surgery with more swelling than you started. You got to be careful with that. If you actually reattach something, the body takes 3 months, say a rotator cuff or an ACL, it takes 3 months for stuff to grow together. So like an ACL, we put people in a brace and we put them on crutches and we restrict them. There's a very dangerous time at 6 weeks where you actually feel good. Your swelling's better. Your range of motion's great. You're starting to build up some muscle. But the tendon isn't fully healed yet. And just like rotator cuff, like you feel better, you're sleeping again, you're moving, but the tendon isn't fully healed. So I have people in my book who, you know, I know their names by heart, and they call. when I slipped when I was, you know, playing golf, was that, you know, do you think I hurt myself? And you know, I just throw my hands up and shake my head and say, come on in and let's take a look, because I have no idea over the phone if you did hurt yourself, but there's certainly a chance you may have. And that's why, you know, most important to listen to your doctor and get your activity levels ahead of time. I always give people a sheet of paper with commonly asked questions, and it's driving, working, sleeping, you know, light activity with a sling. Heavy activity, return to sports. I always go through that, because I always hate with 2 months, they're like, oh, you never said that. And anytime I book somebody for surgery, I have a sheet of paper that says, right?
It is. Yep. So, yeah, it's interesting, because it is such a psychological thing. And I feel like everybody believes they're the one. Oh, I'm at that 6 week mark. I feel good. I'm the one. where this physiological process has accelerated and I should be able to just get right back to it. Exactly. Yeah.
Down on.
Yep. So selfish question here, because that was fascinating. You said if two things have to get attached together, like it takes 12 weeks, like that's, I find that very interesting. And I know that I'm sure not all things are created equal, but something like what I just went through with a full hip replacement, how long before everything in there is, solid and safe. You know what I mean? Like, and I still might be operating a fraction of the capacity, but moving around isn't going to be a dumb thing to do.
So that cup is press fit into that socket. That bone takes 6 weeks to grow in.
Okay.
The soft tissues take longer. The muscles take longer to grow back together, but the bone and the soft tissue, and here's the femur, you know, the femur, that's, we put up in there. So that takes 6 weeks for the bone to grow together. So
okay.
I usually tell people, you know, 6 weeks is reasonable. I've had people golfing by 4 weeks and, you know, so.
But 6 weeks of just, you know, moving around intelligently, you know, some slow air squats, some walking, things like that.
Yeah, stationary bike. Well, and again, this is me. Don't, you know, you have to.
Not medical advice. You know,
just to check with your surgeon.
Two guys chatting.
Yeah. But I will say stationary bike, rowing, you know, light squats, getting the heart moving. First of all, the incision has to heal. So that incision, I like for a hip replacement, I don't want anybody sweating for like 2 weeks, just because bacteria on the skin could seep into the incision. And so 2 weeks sweating. But, you know, certainly getting the blood moving, getting outside, walking, stationary bike, upper body stuff. You could do, you know, presses, seated presses. Right. Pull-ups and stuff like that.
But no loading of the, you said light squats, but no loading of the lower body. Just, you know, think a lot of air squats and maybe even like, is a walking lunge stupid to put that rear leg in that position?
It does stress the hip joint little more. You know, I would, there's always time.
You have
a lifetime of air squats ahead of you.
I'm looking to move intelligently. And now, you know, not to move unintelligently. So that's good to know that it takes 6 weeks for the bone to actually heal around that. That's a useful metric just to have in my head.
Yeah.
Interesting. Okay. Yeah. No, it's, it sucks. It's miserable and frustrating and, you know, and all those things, but it's also very, I've unfortunately been injured, you know, several times in my life, never really due to strength and conditioning, always due to motorcycles or the military. Yeah. And it's always very humbling. You know, I mean, I've always found getting injured is, it's just a phase of like gratitude and appreciation, right? Because as CrossFitters, you know, if you're doing CrossFit, you're exposing yourself to something that sucks pretty bad and you're doing it voluntarily. Like high intensity, it stings. It's fun. It's why jogging is more fun than sprinting, right? I mean, it is what it is. And so people who are drawn to that are interesting individuals who want to push themselves and they're kind of never happy and it's the next challenge, the next whatever. And it doesn't matter what your best lift is. You're kind of upset that it's not a little bit better because that's just who you are, right? And then all of a sudden you get injured and you can't do anything. And you just have such an appreciation for, oh, why wasn't I happy? Like what I would give to squat that weight right now. Like, oh, just be amazed. Like you have this appreciation for what you didn't appreciate in the moment, you know? And so
you don't know what you have until it's gone.
Or you just look at a set of stairs and you're like, the heck with a big back squat. You look at five stairs and you're like, five stairs.
I stand in a privileged area, meaning like I get to appreciate because I see how bad it is. Like I see how bad people are struggling mentally, you know, when they can't exercise or, they need their job back. They got to get back to their job. Like it sucks. And so I see this every day. And so I just appreciate, you know, movement and exercise and health and wellness. And it's, I feel like I'm in a position where it's a privileged position to see, you know, how bad it is when you lose it.
Do you have any tips or tricks to that other side of it? Right. I mean, you stitch people back together, glue them back together, you know, hammer and nails, do all the good, awesome stuff. But then there's that whole other side you said, which is more almost the realm of, you know, psychology and whatnot and, you know, depression and anxiety or guilt or appreciation, whatever it happened to be. and you've seen the gamut for years and years. Do you, have you found any identifying any qualities that help some folks cope through that and make good decisions than compared to other people?
Stay connected. Don't feel like you're after a surgery, you're in a cocoon. Get out, meet your friends, go to the gym, get to the gym as fast as you possibly can. Get to your community, find your tribe. Do not put up a wall and just stay at home. Like that's the stay with your job. Do get to your job. Like there are some people who literally, you know, go into a depression because they're at home for 6 weeks and they're watching daytime TV. And they
would do it to me.
Yep.
Yeah. They think. And you know, when I come to it, I'm always, you know, I'm a big modifier. I'm like, hey, guess what? You get to go to work. You could sit at a desk, you could answer a phone, you could file, you could do whatever. You know, and some people don't want to do that and they're in too much pain, and I get it, but it's really important to, you know, and if you're at home, you know, there's a reason, then, you know, stay connected. Don't just isolate.
Mm-hmm.
And that, you know, from a health point of view, from a busyness point of view, sleep schedules get screwed up, you know, just from pain. And then, you know, they're napping. People are napping because they're falling asleep watching TV, and then they can't sleep at night. And then keep your sleep schedule. That's really important.
Sleep and community. Yeah. Well, I'm kind of curious. You know, you've had a kind of a unique experience. You're obviously really enmeshed in the CrossFit world. You've got your career in the orthopedic medicine field. You know, it sounds like you were pretty pro staying active before the whole CrossFit thing, and it kind of fed into what you're dealing with professionally. At the risk of asking an obvious question, knowing what you know about healing, knowing what you know about the nature of injury and what it takes to, you know, kind of come back from that, has your career bolstered your kind of pursuit of your own personal health and fitness, or has it remained kind of the same?
As my career, I mean, I've always been, that's been my thing. I've been a sports person. I've just enjoyed sports. That's been my identity. And when you get hurt, you lose that identity. So that's, you have to find something to be sure you're doing other stuff, you know, whatever it is. If you get hurt doing something, you always have to have a fallback or something else in your life. But I think seeing the injuries and seeing bad decisions, right? Seeing decisions that you probably shouldn't have done, like that has helped me stay healthy. Like I've stopped playing soccer because you know, people were coming in slide tackling me. And I was like, I can't control this. I'm out of
control. Not worth it.
And it's not worth it, right? It became not worth it. And I loved it. And, you know, I played baseball, football, basketball growing up. And but, you know, now it was soccer and pickup basketball. But same thing, pickup basketball. You know, you get pushed from behind on a rebound or whatever the hell it is. And it just, like, I was like, what, you know, if I break my hand, you know, then I'm out.
And you're not about to get into racing motorcycles?
Well,
it's still time. There's always retirement.
Go-karts. I like go-karts.
I got a question for you. You know, this has all been fantastic and overwhelmingly positive, which is true, right? That the overwhelming majority of the time, where there's a will, there's a way. There, mm-hmm. where there's a modification, there's a way. Scaling is cool and all that good stuff.
Yeah.
How frequently is there, or what does the situation look like where, what does somebody have to do where their response, is there ever a response where you're like, I'm sorry, sir, squatting is literally no longer a part of your life, or deadlifting is no longer a part of your life? Is that the road for somebody?
No. You know, so somebody has bad arthritis in their hip and they don't want to have surgery. They're mechanically, you know, they might not be able to, you know, here's the hip. They might not be able to rotate their hip enough to get below 90. So that's an issue where, and I'll tell them to keep trying, but I won't tell them to keep trying to the point where they're banging their head against the wall. Mm-hmm. I think I just heard your guys, you were talking about somebody's shoulder and they can't, and they can't bring it up more than 130 or 140. This is 90, right. This is 130. They're not going to be a good overhead squatter. And they shouldn't, they shouldn't right. overhead squat. If this is as far as they can go, like they're going to hurt themselves. So, you know, the power cleans or dumbbell squats or, you know, something where they're not pushing that because they have bad arthritis. So, yeah, there are certainly times where you just, you know, I'll tell them to try, but if it's to the point where you're losing fitness because the therapist is trying to push your, you know, joint to a point where it mechanically can't go, then, you know, just don't get to the point where you're limping or missing exercise because it hurts too bad because somebody was pushing on you too hard.
Yeah, it's an interesting thing. I feel like some people would take that and read into it that at that point, it means you cannot express any range of motion within the joint. And it sounds like to me, that's not what is being recommended, right? So if you've got a restriction in that joint due to some, you know, legitimate medical issue, it's not to say that that joint is off limits entirely, but you have to figure out a way to express what range of motion you do have available in a way that's not going to be destructive. Is that accurate?
I would say that is very accurate. Yeah. Yeah.
You know, since I lived that life, getting myself, I might have told you this or maybe in a previous show, I'm getting myself a little Christmas gift here for the gym where since overhead's not my friend. And so a lot of times in lieu of overhead pressing, I default to bench press, you know, just a lot. Mm. But there is a middle range. Like you're saying, I get to like that 130, you know, but I don't have a way to do that safely in the gym. But I have just a flat utility bench. I'm going to go ahead and get myself an adjustable bench.
Incline, so
I
can
do an incline bench. Right. Yeah. So I'm going to be able to hit that sweet middle ground where I can't go totally overhead, but I don't have to just press regular. I can get about that 130 and I'm going to have some incline dumbbell press in my future. And I'm genuinely excited.
And if you know, your incline and you lower the seat enough, you just slide down the back and you do like a little bit of an incline overhead squat.
And there we go. You know, I get everything I need.
Pat, I can't wait to see the front delts that you're going to develop after Christmas here. This is going to be great. Your limited hip capacity and new toy. Man.
Goodness. It's an exercise in patience. Well, I guess, you know, Doc, if you had this platform, you know, is there anything that we should touch on that we didn't cover or just from your medical expertise, a couple of things that you just wish people had in their head heading down the road of strength and conditioning for a happy lifelong journey of fitness?
Yeah, the long, slow directory to a point on, a horizon. I invented a device that will help save people. It's called the Rocket Shield. And for $19.95, you can buy it called the Rocket Shield. And what it is it's a cover that goes over your weights. So no one else knows how much you're lifting. You could be lifting 200 pounds or 2 pounds, but it goes over your weights.
And that'd be amazing.
Number one is don't worry about whoever else is lifting, whatever they're lifting. It's your weight. Take ownership. And then the other one is sort of more of a philosophical thing. Like, we can watch other people. We can be coaches for other people. Like, it doesn't have to be the person at the front of the room. It can be anybody. And you could say like, hey, that overhead squat was really not good. Like, you don't need to lift that. Like, you shouldn't lift that. Like, what if your coach doesn't see it, you know, because of all the reps that are going around? So we can police each other. Like, it shouldn't all be go, go, go. It should be like, let's be safe and let's be sure we're doing it right.
I love that. And I want to echo that just a little bit. I believe very strongly that exercise and the basic understanding of, you know, so many things that we do in CrossFit should not be the domain of an expert. Yes, a good coach is obviously a great person to have around. Yes, somebody who wants to be a coach should pursue it to the degree that they can really make it professional and have a lot of value to offer the people that they're coaching. But at the same time, I think that every single person should have a basic literacy with these movements, that they understand the basics enough to do exactly what you're saying to their friends, their family. You know, they can be that external perspective that says, hey, you know what, Pat, I want the best for you. And I think you should probably dial it back just a little bit. And in my opinion, the more that people are comfortable doing that, the better it is for everybody, because you cannot see what's going on outside of you to the best degree. You just don't have the vantage point. And the more that trust is kind of built up, I think, man, that's just such a much more positive environment all around. So I could not agree with that more. And I don't know. I'm so emphatic about that fact that you don't have to be an expert to give somebody meaningfully useful advice. So take note, everybody listening.
And the other one is when people are modifying, don't make it like a funeral. Like, don't make them like, all right, we'll go sit over. You need to be over on that side of the room. I don't want you on this side of the room. Like, it's okay. Like be part of the class and welcome them. You know, that's awesome. They're coming back. Find modifications for them. You know, keep them there. Your clients will be thrilled that, you know, they're modifying, they're doing other stuff. Like, don't push anybody beyond what their doctor's advice is, or, you know, say, oh, I think you can do that. Like, just, you know, keep it in the realm and keep them in the class. And that's what people want. People just don't want to be on the sidelines. Like, let them be part of the class.
And here's the other thing. I was going to say, if you're going to work out for your whole life, modifications are in your future. They are coming for you, my friend. So you might as well not make fun of somebody else for doing it, because it's coming your way.
Yeah, absolutely. And I would say, you know, this is something I think Greg was so good at pointing out, was that, hey, you know, as a coach or somebody that wants the best for somebody else, you know, taking a high-level athlete and adding 5 pounds to their squat or whatever, I mean, yeah, that's satisfying, sure. But what's a lot more satisfying is taking somebody who's struggling, taking somebody who has a lot more to lose because maybe their physicality isn't as developed and they're sitting in a more risky position, taking that person and elevating them beyond where they are now. There's so much more satisfaction to that. And I think that's just one of those no-brainers in the coaching world, that if you have somebody who needs to be modifying, not only is it not talked down about, but that should be, you know, a celebration of this person because they're willing to come in and put in the work in an environment that it most likely is maybe not what's natural for them or not what's comfortable for them. And yet here they are. I mean, that's something to be celebrated, in my opinion. And again, for the coaches out there, I think it takes a while to recognize that those are often the most rewarding people to work with. It's not the high level athlete that you shave a couple seconds off. That likely was going to happen anyway, so don't get too hot-headed about that. The people that really need your help, that really need your assistance, those are the ones that you really want to dig in.
Yeah, absolutely.
I think that covers it nicely, actually. So, Sean, you're up in Massachusetts?
Yeah, Boston, Worth Beach, New England.
Okay, let's validate that, okay? So here's your New England question. If in the rest of the country you're traveling and somebody was looking for a drinking fountain, a water fountain, what would they call that if they were visiting Boston?
A bubbler.
All right, you pass. You're good to go. You're validated.
It's been a while for that one.
You know what else I still catches me every now and then? And I've been out of Massachusetts for so long now, but I don't say it as that. That, you know, when you're driving down the road and it's, you know, the shoulder of the road that in Massachusetts, not the shoulder of the road, it's the breakdown lane. It's like outside of New England, it's like the shoulder. I'm like, pull into the breakdown lane. Like, the breakdown lane? What in the heck is that? Like, my car's not broken. It's like, no, that's just what you call it. Pull into the breakdown lane. So, yeah, good old Massachusetts. God bless it.
The TTF, like Dunkin' Donuts commercial. You remember that one?
Which one now?
On Saturday Night Live, they had Casey Affleck dressed up as like the mayor of Duncan.
I'm sure. It's just Duncan now, right? They took the Disney, the donuts out of it.
You did yourself a little bit there.
Outside the door, and he's like, I'm not smoking. Inside.
Oh, yes. I did see that. It was fantastic. You know, they don't have Dunkin' Donuts in Washington State. It's very bizarre. But anyway, we're totally off topic. But let people know. If they want to find out about you, you put out a lot of fantastic, useful, just information, articles, videos, you know, go ahead. This is the time.
Oh, cool.
How can people find out all that stuff?
Well, funny you say that. So I'm working with Jay Vera and Karen Thompson and Lauren Fulkerson, and we're starting an ebook. And
fantastic.
Got a YouTube channel. And then we're going to do a little video series on stuff like this, shoulder health.
Nice.
Knee health, so that's going to be big. They're starting a company called Media Launch, and cool. Then I'm at Orthopedics New England in Boston. 321GoMD is my Instagram. And I got a YouTube channel, and I'm going to start loading up with some tech videos and stuff.
And what's your YouTube channel? Is it 321GoMD?
SeanRocketMD.
SeanRocketMD. Okay, great.
Two T's. S-E-A-N. Two T's.
Awesome, man. Well, Doc, genuinely appreciated, my friend, 100%.
I wish you well in your recovery. Please let me know if there's any questions of, you know, when can you overhead squat?
No, we already established it's all incline press from here on out.
Yeah, I can't wait. I'll have such an appreciation for just movement of any form. Again, it's you don't miss it until it's gone.
Oh, God. Let me know if you have any questions. But yeah, certainly check with your surgeon.
Yeah, for sure. Many things. Yeah, of course, not medical advice, just three guys talking on the internet. But, you know, if you enjoyed this program, I hope that you did. If you've got input for future shows, you know, go to the BTWB YouTube channel, find this show, post your thoughts on this topic, on another topic. Is there a guest that we should have? We read all those things. It helps drive where the show goes. Hopefully all the viewers and listeners out there feel that it's all of your show. It's not really mine or Boz's show. It's all of your show. And we're just here keeping the seats warm. And for Dr. Sean Rocket and Adrian Bosman, I'm Pat Sherwood, and we will see you next time.